for a party they agree with without fearing that that will contribute to the worst thing happening. So people vote defensively. This increases cynicism.
Well, it is NDP Leadership Week on the pod. And you might be thinking, Rachel, New Democrats choose Jagmeet Singh's successor in March. Why are you doing this week now? Well, my friends, the deadline to sign up to have a say in who you want to win that race is actually coming up way sooner. To vote in the race, you have to be an NDP member by January 28th, and that is less than 2 weeks from now. So as you can imagine, the people who want to win that leadership are hustling to get their supporters signed up. That's why I am also trying to make sure that you, my wonderful, perfect, incredibly charming listeners and viewers, get to meet all these candidates. So you already heard a little while ago from Tony and Tennille. That's Tony McQuayle and Tennille Johnston. Apparently, I'm on a first name basis with them based on how I'm talking here. And you also on Friday heard from Avi Lewis. But today, I've got another one for you. We've got leadership hopeful Rob Ashton.
This is a class war, and don't ever let anybody tell you differently.
This guy is the worker's worker. You know that saying, your favorite drag queen's favorite drag queen? He's like the union equivalent of that. He spent over 30 years as a dock worker and a union leader. He's currently the national president of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union for Canada. He's also very clear that he is not a politician. And to that I say, well, not yet. What he is, however, is laser focused on issues like affordability, inequality, and the wealth gap. While he gives off the vibe of a gruff version of Santa Claus, you can forget the coal because this guy isn't afraid to punch a hole right through the stocking of the billionaire class. Speaking of not pulling punches, Rob has made headlines for actually criticizing one of the NDP leadership competitors, which is something that you don't often see in NDP leadership races when they tend to violently agree, to steal a phrase from Nathan Cullen. Then there's his little AI-related oopsie that got him in some hot water with potential supporters. Hey, at least we're keeping things interesting, huh? That is why I am thrilled to welcome Rob Ashton on today's show. Rob, welcome to Bubble Pop!
Hi, Rachel. I haven't laughed that much in an intro in a long time.
I do my best, you know.
you mentioned the drag queens. It's one of my favorite bars to drink in Ottawa. It's in the Byward Market.
At Lookout?
That's the joint. Yeah. It's a fantastic place.
Yeah, it's super fun. I haven't been there in way too long, so got to get back there. okay, Rob. Yeah. Enough about the drag queens. We got to talk about some serious stuff here. Okay. Not that drag isn't very serious. I mean, I had some big feelings about the results of Canada's drag race, but we'll put those aside. Why are you the best candidate to lead the NDP? Like, specifically, what sets you apart from the other folks who are running? What makes you different and unique and people should vote for you?
So I've been a longshoreman here in the ports of Vancouver for the last 32 years of my life. Right out of high school, I came to the waterfront. I know working class issues. I know the struggles that people go through. For the last 10 years, I've been the national president of my union. The last 20 years, I've been representing workers. I see it every day. I've lived it. My members struggle through it. And we fight every round of bargaining to get them better deals so they can have a better way of life. I've supported workers on picket lines in British Columbia, across the country, and in even other parts of the world. And I see what the ruling class, what the employing class, the people that own the means of production do to keep us down. And I am angry and I'm frustrated and I'm pissed off about the way our country has been created, the way our country is ruled by them. And I'm the person that's going to bring back workers to Ottawa, that it's going to be our voices running this country, not corporations, not the ruling class, but the workers, the citizens of this country. That's why I'm the best candidate in this race.
And your platform kind of reflects that worker focus, right? Like, you want to make it easier to join a union, give a job to everyone that wants one, penalize CEOs that make more than 50 times what they pay a typical worker. Personally, I love that plank. And you've got some non-worker specific stuff in there too, like, you know, building a public east-west high-speed rail corridor and cracking down on corporate landlords. But on the worker front, this is where we have really seen the conservatives sort of eat the NDP's lunch, especially in the most recent election. I wanted to ask you, like, how do you break through the messaging that the conservatives are currently successfully reaching workers with? Like, what is the NDP currently doing wrong, and how would you do that differently?
This is the funnest part, is, and we've been proving it all through our campaign. We have people coming up to us. When I say we, I'm not talking like I'm the friggin' king of the world or anything. When I say we, I mean like our campaign team. We've had people coming up to us at campaign stops across the country saying that they were conservatives, or they voted conservatives, but they've seen our campaign, and they're joining up to the party so that they can vote for us. Because people are tired of Polyev's lies. You know, he's been cosplaying as a worker for the last few years. And when he finally meets a worker, he's going to shit himself because he won't know actually what to do and how to talk. A worker that's put on, in quotations, equal playing field as him. Yeah. And so what is that? What's the party doing wrong? We've never really changed, you see, but we forgot how to talk to people. And when I talk about workers in the working class, I'm actually talking about every Canadian in this country. Whether you have a union job, a non-union job, you can't find a job for whatever reason because there's no jobs out there to be found. You're on disability, old age security, you're Indigenous, you're part of the LGBTQI plus community. Everybody falls under the working class umbrella. Small businesses are key to the NDP. So we haven't really changed. We just forgot how to talk to people. We forgot how to communicate with people. We forgot how to give our EDAs power so that the members of those EDAs have power. And I know how to do that because that's how our union is run. Our union is a rank and file based union, bottom up. I get my direction from our members, and that's the direction that I move forward. And my leadership team here in ILW Canada, that's, we move forward with it. And that's what's sorely lacking at the moment with the New Democratic Party, is New Democrats aren't being heard. They want to talk about affordability. They want to talk about housing. They want to talk about jobs. They want to talk about coming home safely so they're not dying at work. They want to be able to go to work to be able to come home safely. People on disability don't want to live in legislated poverty. People on old age security, same thing. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
I talk about bringing our soapboxes back, and I usually pack one under my arm, so...
Yeah, no apology needed. I am, you know, when you're speaking about the message, sort of the NDP, like rank and file needing to be heard, and you know, just the NDP messaging getting out there. One thing that I have encountered in reporting on the NDP over the years is, like, sometimes the messaging isn't there for sure. And other times the messaging is there, but it's somehow not reaching, like, a broader public. I don't know whether that's because of the way in which the NDP is covered. I don't know if that's because of how they choose to communicate. I'm just wondering, like, what would you do differently in terms of that messaging? Like, how would you get the voice of the rank and file NDP to the forefront and then make sure that that actually reaches Canadians?
So that's the point of giving more power to the EDAs. Right. So people can work through the EDAs. Their EDAs can funnel it up to Ottawa or head office or central or whatever the hell. I don't even like calling it central anymore because it's not centralized power. Like, I absolutely hate that. I bore that. Mm. And so we have to, that's the key thing about communication, is having two-way communication between us and the EDAs. And getting to community centers, getting to job sites. There's marches or rallies that fall within our value system, then we go there. I learned early on in my career as a union politician that if you stop going to places and you stop seeing people where they're at, they stop talking to you. They forget about you and they start to not vote for you. And so that's, I've held that in my heart. I try to see as many of my members as I can. And that's why we're traveling the country, going to places like Brantford, Ontario, going to Regina, you know, going into Halifax, Nova Scotia, because we have to go to places where we haven't been. And people say like, well, we shouldn't elect somebody that doesn't have a seat in the House. No, we damn well bloody better well sure elect somebody that doesn't have a seat in the House, because when those seven members of the NDP are busting their ass in the House, that newly elected leader, me, will be traveling the country, hitting all these places and talking to people and bringing people home where they belong.
I think that that makes a lot of sense to, you know, get those boots on the ground and try to connect in that way. And I guess I just, I hope it works, because I it feels like the NDP's been throwing a lot at the wall. But also I think that a criticism that we've seen is that it's lost its, I don't know, like it's lost its working class roots. It's lost its that sort of vibe. Like people would, maybe that was part of the attacks on Jagmeet Singh that were resonating. You know, you can argue that there's a misinformation machine in full swing, but also like, you know, the guy dressed well, he had nice cars. He kind of gave that vibe of not necessarily being in touch with or like having a worker vibe. Yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit though about the, specifically like the sentiment that we've seen among workers and, you know, with the rising anti-immigration sentiment that we've been seeing among workers, that I think we're seeing this combination of the conservatives playing on, you know, trying to eat the NDP's lunch with respect to like going after the union guys, cosplaying as workers, as you said. I mean, I can't say steel toe boots look that natural on Pierre Poilievre. You know, maybe he had a phase that I'm unaware of, but they don't seem to suit him that well. But then there's also that element about feeding into some of the anti-immigrant rhetoric, and we're seeing the conservatives lean into that a little bit more. That's something that you've been quite outspoken about. You know, saying that you feel the NDP hasn't done enough to address that rising racist hate towards workers. Can you tell me a little bit about why you feel they're dropping the ball there, what you would do differently?
Yeah, so it's the politics of hate versus the politics of hope, love, and compassion. And I'm not obviously the first person to speak like that. Jack Layton brought that to the forefront for the NDP. Politics of hate, it's telling somebody that your life is bad, your life is tough and hard, and you can't afford anything that you want. So blame your neighbor for that problem, because it's your neighbor's fault. And that's the biggest crock I've ever heard in my life. And so, because it's not your neighbor's fault, because your neighbor never made the labor laws that work against us. Your neighbor didn't cut deals so that corporations can come in and get billions of dollars and then they can leave, or they can farm out their work to other countries in telecommunications, for example. So we have to break that narrative, and we have to keep repeating stuff, because the other side doesn't. That's why the politics of hate is working so well. We have to be unapologetically loud to say, it's not your neighbor's fault. Your life is tough. Your life is hard because of government, because of the federal government that's in power, because of the provincial governments that cut. And that's always liberal conservative type government. They don't build on anything. That's why your life is tough. It's because the governments that do that to you, the right wing ruling class government. And so what do we have to do? So one of our platforms is to the temporary foreign worker program that we have right now, get rid of it completely, because it doesn't work for workers. It doesn't work for migrant workers. It doesn't work for Canadian workers. It only works for employers. It only works for the ruling class. And so what we envision is creating a new program that works for all workers across this country, workers that are coming in to find a better life for themselves or their families, and gives them a pathway to permanent residency or even citizenship. a program that allows them to unionize if they choose to, a program that allows them to fight for safety in the job, a program that allows them to push back on an employer when the employer is oppressing them. Because the current program that we have right now is just modern day slavery.
It is NDP Leadership Week on the pod, and NDP supporters have about 1 week left to sign up for a membership, which is the only way to vote in that leadership race. And so far, Bubble Pop listeners have gotten to know all the candidates in this race except for one. Heather McPherson is the only proven winner in this race. She's the sole sitting NDP MP running to replace Jagmeet Singh. And not only that, she's an Alberta NDP MP who has held on to her Edmonton area seat since 2019. That's pretty impressive. Even surviving the decimation of her party in the most recent election. Before entering politics, Heather worked in the nonprofit set. That's the joy of live. I can't use my words. Before entering politics, Heather worked in the nonprofit sector where she worked for human rights, sustainable development, and global justice. She's also got a master's degree in education focused on Indigenous knowledge and sustainability. In her time as an elected MP, she's taken on some serious files, perhaps most notably foreign affairs, which is the one that has seen her work so tirelessly to push the government to act on Israel's genocide in Gaza. She's not afraid of a fight, and she has shown Canada that she can win them. Now she's widely seen as a front runner in the NDP leadership race. She even clinched an endorsement from the high-profile former NDP MP, Charlie Angus. But the first endorsement from one of her current caucus colleagues, Leah Gazan, went to Avi Lewis. That comes after Leah also took issue with Heather's messaging on purity tests within the NDP, something that's at the center of a heated debate about how big the NDP's tent should be allowed to get. I'm really excited to hear Heather's take on the future of her party and her vision to lead it. So Heather McPherson, welcome to Bubble Pop. Welcome back, I should say.
Yeah, it's so good to be here. Nice to see you, Rachel.
Yeah, I think last time I had you on, I remember I asked you if you were considering a leadership run. And look at us now, eh? You're in full swing. You were a little coy about it before.
It's hilarious. I didn't come from a political family. My dad was a truck driver. My mom was a teacher. And so my mom constantly looks at me and is like, how are we here? How did this happen?
That's so funny. Yeah. So I did want to ask you a little bit about those things that sort of make you unique, right? Because one criticism the NDP leadership races tend to get, Nathan Cullen put it really well in like 2011. He said that you guys tend to violently agree. And I wanted to ask you to define yourself in a way that differentiates you from your competitors. Like, what sets you apart from them and underscores why you should be the one to lead the NDP?
Well, that's a great question. I honestly believe that what we need to do as a progressive political party is win more seats. I am unabashedly interested in winning more seats. And it's because I know when we win more seats, New Democrats deliver for Canadians. We actually get things done. We saw that in the last parliament with the dental care program, with the framework for the pharmacare program, you know, with the anti-scab legislation. So for me, I think the thing that sets me apart is that on day one, like the day after the leadership race, I can get to work. This is work I've been doing. This is work that I have done well before I thought that my name would be in the hat to be the next leader. You know, I am a sitting MP. I think the next election is going to have a real focus on foreign affairs. And that is something that I have focused on. That has been my life's work, but also what I've done in Parliament. And I also think that I'm really interested in building our party so that people across this country, people that maybe have stopped feeling like they belonged at our table, stopped feeling like they were part of our party, feel welcome in again. A story I tell a lot, you know, I'll go back to my dad. He has no idea if he is a social democrat or a democratic socialist. He does not know, but he is someone in our community who believes in a healthcare system, who believes in taking care of his neighbor, who believes in, you know, our environment and protecting people in our communities, protecting human rights, both in Canada and around the world. So he's a New Democrat, but you know, the way that we have talked to people in the past, I think has made our party smaller, and I want to make our party bigger. I want more New Democrats to be sitting in Ottawa. I want us to work better with the provincial parties so that we can build a more just and more fair country.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. And I want to dig into that, you know, bigger tent question in a moment mm-hmm. here. But first, I'd like to dig into a little bit of your proposed policies and, you know, just answer the broader question, too, of, you know, the NDP's identity, and particularly in an era where, like, in the last election, the Conservatives really tried to eat you guys' lunch. Like, they went after those union votes, right? They went after that working class vote. And I, you know, so you've got some policies on your website already. They so far include a national housing emergency plan that would, just to name a few things, end the corporate control of housing and introduce a renter's bill of rights. You also propose to rebuild the NDP to try to put power in the hands of the party's grassroots, which has been a big criticism that the party and a big conversation the party's been having internally to try to, like, fix it up so that you guys can win, could deal with those internal issues. Mm-hmm. And you've got a jobs plan that includes a community work placement program, a mentorship network, and more supports for skills training and education. I couldn't help but notice when I was reading some of this, and this obviously doesn't apply to all of the ideas you have here, but there's definitely some overlap with some stuff that Carney has done, like embracing modular housing and getting the government more involved in home building. And I just wanted you to explain to the public, like, you know, obviously there's a concern about the Conservatives eating the NDP's lunch, but what are you doing to make sure that you are offering an option that is distinct enough from the Liberal Party as well?
Well, I mean, Rachel, you know the deal. The Liberals love to run on our policies. They love to run on the progressive side of things. And then Mark Carney has shown that he's quite interested in governing from a much closer to the conservative place, if not in an actual conservative place. So for me, I mean, one of the things that has been most disappointing is that in April, Mark Carney promised double, you know, twice the amount of money that he actually delivered for housing in the fall budget. That's a problem. We have a national housing emergency. The fastest growing population of unhoused people in this country are seniors who have never been unhoused before. And Mr. Carney didn't feel that that was worthy of the investment that he, in fact, promised Canadians during the election campaign. So I do think that we need to treat this as an emergency. I do think we need to get corporate control out. And I do think we need to talk to Canadians in a way that they can understand. You know, I don't agree with almost anything that Pierre Poilievre does. I don't think he's a serious politician. I don't think he cares about Canadians. I don't think his goal in Parliament is to, in fact, make life better for Canadians. But he is very good at those simple messages and making sure that he's talking to people about the things that matter to them. That's what we have to do as New Democrats. You know, people in this country are worried about housing. Absolutely. I hear it all the time. They are deeply worried about their jobs, whether they're going to be able to keep their jobs, whether young people in their lives are going to be able to get a job, and they are worried about our healthcare system. And if there is one thing that I know as an Albertan, it is that if we do not fight for our healthcare system right now, if we do not push back on things that we are seeing from Danielle Smith, now Scott Moe, of course, Doug Ford, the healthcare system will be gone. And I think Canadians across the country know that New Democrats are the ones that you know, we're the ones that got that healthcare system in place. We're the ones that are going to fight and protect it as well. I think those are some of the ways that we push back against the false narratives that Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives are putting forward.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned how the Liberals sort of take your policies and run on them. But do you feel as though there's sort of this, I find, a schism within the NDP that always emerges in these leadership races and when you guys have these internal discussions, right? And it's sort of I think that what exemplifies it is the fact mm-hmm. that you're backed by Rachel Notley, right? She was there at your announcement when you announced you were running for leader.
Yeah.
She's the former NDP Alberta Premier, for anyone watching who might not be aware. Her support of your campaign, I think, exemplifies the sort of big divide between you and your fellow frontrunner, Avi Lewis, who authored the Leap Manifesto, which is something that Notley repudiated. And, you know, she called sort of naive. And I guess I wanted to ask you, like, where do you stand on this rift and like along the line of where the NDP should orient itself in terms of that? Like, should it be more unabashedly left, or should it, you know, maybe take some smaller swings, but would that, does that, is that more realistic? Does it make you more electable? That seems to be the debate that I constantly hear new Democrats having. Where do you land on that?
And listen, I wouldn't say smaller swings. That's not how I see it at all. I mean, I think we've got some really good progressive policies that we're bringing out, the ones that are already up, but we've also got ones that are coming in the coming days. So I don't think those are small swings. I think those are actually good, solid policies that will make life for Canadians better. And obviously I'm extraordinarily proud that Rachel Notley has endorsed me, that she's been supporting me. You know, you mentioned Charlie Angus. I'm grateful that Charlie has supported me as well. But I think the goal of any political party has to be to win more seats. And, you know, the idea that we would attack the provincial versions of the NDP, the provincial parties of the NDP, is really problematic. You know, I think Wab Kanew is doing a wonderful job in Manitoba. You know, I think the fact that we are government in British Columbia, huge oppositions in Alberta and Saskatchewan, official oppositions in Ontario and Nova Scotia, the provincial parties are doing good work. They are making a real difference. So we shouldn't be giving conservatives and liberals a cudgel to hit each other with. You know, you talked about the Leap Manifesto. I will say, you know, when that was brought forward in Edmonton, there was no conversation with the environment minister at the time. You know, none of those conversations happened. It's just, I want to work with our parties. I want to work with all of those people in this country that want to make life better for Canadians. And that includes the provincial NDP. You know, let's not pick fights with our friends. Let's work together. Let's agree on the things we can agree on. We're not going to agree on everything. Of course not. This is a big country. There are different priorities for different regions. But we have to be working together if we actually want to move a progressive agenda forward.
Excerpt from three recent episodes of Bubble Pop. Find the show archives wherever you get your podcasts at rachelgilmore.substack.com and at harbingermedianetwork.com. You've been listening to Harbinger Showcase on your local campus and community radio station. This episode's been brought to you by the news aggregation website Unrigged. Learn more about Canada's coalition of more than 30 progressive journalism publishers and get all your independent Canadian news, videos, and podcasts in one place at unrigged.ca. Follow us on Instagram and Blue Sky for updates on new episodes. And subscribe to the newsletter at harbingermedianetwork.com for a weekly Wednesday roundup from Canada's cross-country community of 83 socially and politically progressive podcasts. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Until then, I'm Harbinger Director Andre Goulet in Montreal. Now, back to your regularly scheduled community radio station programming.
Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia, this is CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Bird Note. Every summer, millions of birds flock to the Arctic Circle to find mates and raise their young. Now, a new study suggests that this tradition has been going strong since the age of the dinosaurs. Paleontologists found evidence of the earliest known Arctic breeding colony from fossils uncovered in northern Alaska. The site dates back nearly 73 million years, when many prehistoric predecessors to modern birds still had teeth, including the gull-like ichthyornithians and the flightless, loon-like hesperornithians. These were among several types of ancient avians preserved as both adults and hatchlings, which suggests the site was used for nesting. There were even fossils from early members of bird lineages that gave rise to the ducks and chickens still around today. But why the Arctic? Just like today, these birds were likely taking advantage of the abundant food provided by the 24 hours of summer daylight. The traits that allowed early modern birds to thrive in the Arctic climate might have even helped them survive the mass extinction that wiped out the rest of the dinosaurs. You'll find more about Arctic birds, both past and present, when you visit our website, birdnote.org. I'm Adé Ben-Salahuddin.